Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the whole crew, John Rurick, Simon Schuster, Jacob Kanzler, Abigail Walls, and Jack Spencer. A little later, John's interview with Ronna Romney McDaniel. We'll play that. First, before we get into that, guys, we had Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton in this stage last week as if Michigan is a battleground state. And some still think Michigan is a battleground state. So I'm going to go around the room. Is Michigan a battleground state, John?
I don't think it's a battleground state other than the fact that in Macomb, in the UP, if Hillary Clinton is active there, she could probably help the House Democrats. That's where the battle is.
Is it a battleground state, Simon?
I would say no. I mean, if you look at all poll aggregation, it's very much in Clinton's favor.
All right. Jacob, are we a battleground state?
I would also say no. I mean, we've been blue for a while. I don't know what it's going to take for us to go red at this point. I don't know if you will with Trump in the race.
Okay. So, Abigail, are we a battleground state?
I would say in the last couple of weeks, perhaps. Polls are great, but if it all comes down to who cares, whether Republicans are more invested in this race or Democrats are.
Okay, Jack, yes or no?
I would say it's right on the edge of being a battleground state. I mean, for Trump to win here, a lot of very odd things would have to happen. It'd be like taking a football team and saying, do they have a chance to win, and say, yes if it rains, yes if it this, yes if it that. But yeah, I mean, if you have a suppressed vote on the I-75 corridor in southeast Michigan, several other things occur, Michigan could then get back into the game, I think. But if you look at even on the right, when they talk about battleground states, they list Pennsylvania, they list Ohio, they list Wisconsin, they list Florida, and Michigan seems to be kind of this afterthought. And I would say we're right now, it's August, so you can't absolutely count it out, but we're not right up there with the top states, no.
I would say, yes, we are a battleground state until we decide that Michigan isn't a battleground state, which I know seems kind of strange. But remember, in the 2008 election, Michigan was a battleground state until John McCain said, we're not going to play in Michigan anymore. As of that time, we were not a battleground state. But as long as people are willing to fight for Michigan, I would say that we are. And if you take a look at the map, I don't think Trump is going to follow the same formula as Romney or McCain, where it all kind of equaled out to, okay, well, Florida goes red, then we can win, or Ohio. Trump kind of changes the map quite a bit, right? I mean, his appeal is to such a different group of people that in almost like a week, we could be talking something completely different. The switch would be flipped, and all of a sudden, Michigan is in play again. So I don't think he is in a position to rule anything out.
Well, you make a good point, Kyle, because if you pay attention to where he's been, I mean, last week he was in New Hampshire.
In Connecticut.
Yeah. And so what does that mean? You know, is it just because it's a random thing? And remember, we're talking about the Donald Trump campaign here, so maybe it is just a random thing. But I do think that this year, one week, Trump is almost tied with Clinton or with her. And then, you know, 3 weeks later, he's 10 points behind. The question is that going to continue to go back and forth? I mean, what are we going to be seeing a month from now? Is she going to be 20 points ahead, or are they going to be neck and neck again?
See, and that's the other thing I was wondering too, guys, is has Trump kind of hit bottom? Like, is this a roller coaster or is this a slide?
I don't think it's either. I think it's more of a cap. I think he's gotten where he's going to get, and that's where he's going to stay. I mean, he's got the base.
So has he hit the cap?
Yeah, I think he's had. I think he's capped.
I mean, Trump right now is continuing to play the same game that he did that won him the nomination. But the thing is, that's not going to win him the general election, and this is what a lot of people have been saying. And I mean, the narrative that he's presenting in Michigan right now is something that would have really, really resonated maybe in the early 90s, in 1985, when we were really in the throes of outsourcing. We were really in the idea that the power was shifting from Michigan and that we were losing this might and that we have to regain it. At a certain point, you know, while we've lost this thing that we were so enamored with, you know, this lover that we had, this big manufacturing sector, you know, maybe we've moved on. And I think that that's really going to be the big question for when
we go to the polls.
That's so sad.
You know, but eventually, if you love something, you have to let it go, John.
Deep philosophical discussions on the MERS podcast.
Having come from the Manufacturers Association, I don't necessarily support that.
I really think voter enthusiasm has a lot to how this is going to play out. Both candidates are equally disliked, depending on which polls you consult. I think trying to read the tea leaves of how they're playing into the general election is a little too early to really see how the campaigns are going into the general, very different race we're going to see shaping up in the next week or two.
Jack, I want to ask you about what Trump said last week after his trip in Michigan, where he was very professional and actually came out with kind of the standard Republican cut taxes, cut regulation type message, and then talked about Obama and ISIS. Is he playing the media for fools here in that everybody has to realize that he couldn't have been serious when he said that Clinton and Obama were the founders of ISIS, and yet the media treated it as if he was actually speaking from point of authority and actually making these claims from a legitimate frame of reference.
The trouble is with Trump is he stuck his foot in his mouth so many times that now all these things have become even more of a game to jump on anything he says. I mean, to simply use it as if he was specifically claiming they were the founders and they went someplace and they created it. You know, I mean, he was using it in a slang term. But this is what the guy should be avoiding, and it's obvious at this point he's never going to be able to avoid it. Now, every time he opens his mouth, he's taken himself off message. The one thing I continue to wonder about, though, is if the idea with him is that if somebody's out there and people see him again or her, again and again and again long enough, do people suddenly start switching off in their mind and do they become somehow more acceptable? Not liked. Neither one of these candidates are going to be liked. But is there a point where he just becomes more, oh, that's Donald shooting his mouth off again? I wouldn't necessarily bet on it, but I think that may be his best chance, is just the absolute fact that he's being seen all the time, he's being said all the time, and maybe there's a point where, rather than a cap, maybe there's a point where it doesn't bother people as much anymore, it's just Donald shooting his mouth off again.
All right, well, let's go from somebody who is not measured in any way and shoots off the hip to somebody who is the complete opposite, in Brian Kelly, the lieutenant governor, who this past weekend at 2:44 in the morning, I may add, put out a Facebook post that has now received 1,400 likes, which is pretty impressive for anybody. And this had to do with him defending the viewpoint of Bill Milliken, in that Bill Milliken, the former governor, is supporting Hillary Clinton in this coming election, and the Grand Traverse County Republican Party saying, well, if you want to support her, go ahead, but we're basically going to disown you because that's not the Republican Party that we represent here. So Brian Kelly's message then of accepting other people's viewpoint and one of civility at a time where this election is at times very uncivil. I want you guys to react to this message, Abby.
So my question about that post is, how is it uncivil to disown a candidate who has chosen the opposing party's candidate? I mean, it's one thing to not support Donald Trump. It's quite a different thing to go and pick the other team's player, who is, I mean, undeniably, whether or not you think she's the more rational or reasonable candidate or more conventional candidate, is, for all intents and purposes, not a Republican. You know, Lieutenant Governor's point about civility is well taken, but I wouldn't say this is about not supporting Donald Trump. It's about crossing the line to support the other candidate.
I think that this is really kind of a strategic response to an extraordinary circumstance. I think that the Republican Party, especially during this election year, is undergoing sort of fractures along lines that, you know, relate to principle and, you know, political practicality, that a lot of these things are going to pivot around the outcome in November. And whether or not, you know, these allegiances hold or form, I think that in terms of Brian's move here, this is a way of punting in a sense. And he's trying to push the ball down the line and say that, like, you know, after the fallout of November, after whatever happens, we need to be able to reform and we can't burn bridges, you know, because right now I think the Republican Party is very much at a crossroads in terms of identity.
Elections come and go like clockwork, but friends and family are priceless. Jack, what did you make out of that?
I think Brian Kelly, knowing him, this was probably something just less calculated and more sincere. The time of day that he put it out probably indicates that. Maybe he was bothered by the extent to which some people jumped on Milliken. And yeah, I mean, he's looking ahead and looking past this election to to getting people together again afterward and so on and so forth. But I would tend to think this is a less calculated thing and more just a sincere expression.
Yeah, I think it was much more of a statement of, we don't need to take official action, disclaim Milliken as a Republican, and they're, what's the benefit of that? I mean, you can have your opinion, you can, as an individual, you can share it on Facebook that, yeah, it would have been nice if he would have endorsed a Republican candidate. He's been hit or miss on those candidates for a long time, and this is nothing new. So I don't think you needed to have party action to say, you're no longer a Republican, here's the door.
Apparently the unpopular person at the table. But I mean,
it makes for a good show.
I agree that, you know, it's probably a personal, it reads like a personal sentiment, but what is the value of an institution that stands for nothing? If you're not going to disown a public official who is a Republican, who goes and supports at the highest office a Democrat over a chosen Republican, I mean, what do you say you stand for as an institution?
Because it's part of the problem the Republican Party has now. I mean, if somebody agrees with you 75% of the time, then that's great. I mean, I don't even agree with my wife 75% of the time.
I completely disagree with the idea that a political party somehow has to be popular at all times. I mean, very frequently institutions that actually stand for something are quite unpopular.
Just taking a look at the response that Kelly has got on Facebook, we've had 1,300 thumbs up, 90 hearts, 6 cry faces, and 1 Abby beet red angry face. So, I would, just from gauging the reaction here, I think more people agreed with John on this. All right, so with that, let's move on to your interview with Ronald Romney McDaniel.
This week at the Detroit Economic Club, Donald Trump came down and spoke. We had a dozen or 14 protesters, including one Rashida Tlaib, a former state rep. What do you make of that?
Well, first of all, the fact that Donald Trump has open events, that he lets people come, he's willing to take on protesters and have them be able to give their voice. Hillary Clinton doesn't have those types of events. All of her events are very carefully controlled. I think the protesters did not show well at the Detroit Economic Club. It was not received well by the audience, but Donald Trump didn't let him faze him as he gave a very substantive speech on how to keep jobs coming and growing in our country and focus on the economy. But yeah, I was not impressed with them. I thought it was incredibly rude.
So you're not going to coordinate protesters when Hillary Clinton comes to town?
No, not in her event. First of all, we could never get into her events. She doesn't let those types of events happen, just like she doesn't talk to the press, just like she carefully crafts and controls everything she says and does. And Donald Trump is a different type of candidate. He has big crowds. He's willing to take that risk because he wants to get his message out. That says a lot about their candidacies. And take note that he came to Michigan and then she scheduled her event. And Mike Pence came to Michigan and then Tim Kaine scheduled their event. So we're leading on making Michigan a battleground state.
Odds that he can take Michigan, it hasn't been done since George Herbert Walker Bush did it way back in the day. What do you think?
I'm going to say 50-50. It's an uphill climb for Republican in Michigan in presidential years. However, with the strong primary showing he had, with Hillary Clinton's abysmal primary, the fact that he's campaigning here and spending time in Michigan, which we haven't seen a Republican candidate do for a long time, I think that puts us in the 50-50 category.
Okay. Give us your assessment of his field operation in Michigan, because there's been talk about that in other states. Where are we at?
Well, the field operation for the Trump campaign is really the state party. We've been up and running operations for the past year in many of the districts. We're the ground game. We're the ones who are going to be creating the offices, the walk programs, the absentee chase programs. And we're working hand in hand with the Trump operation, and it's going very, very well.
We talked a little bit about this, I think, when Romney was running last time. Do you guys have any new strategies as far as getting the vote out, new technologies, anything you're really working on you're kind of excited about this year?
Tons of new strategies and technologies, but we're not revealing our
playbook.
No way.
No way. Obviously, this year represents a different kind of presidential election. We've even got some Republicans in Michigan that aren't that big of a fan of the nominee. Have you been called in to kind of play the moderator or referee at all?
Well, as party chair, I am here to help unify Republicans around our nominee. It has taken a little longer this year. I think the fact that we had 17 candidates, that we recognize this is our best chance to win the White House, with Barack Obama leaving in an open White House, it takes a little more effort, and that's my job. We've seen our grassroots really coalesce around the nominee, and we're going to keep working to get everybody on board. We're going to need everyone to win in November.
Okay. Are Republicans that say, I can't do this, are they disloyal Republicans?
no, there are Republicans that are taking a little longer to come around. We're going to keep working on them. And we have Democrats who are coming over. We have independents. I've certainly seen that at our events. I've seen people that haven't been traditional Republicans coming in and saying Donald Trump is going to be a change agent. He's somebody who speaks to me. He's recognizing that the middle class and the working class is being left behind by the Obama policies, and that's something that's resonating, and we are seeing new voters come over to the Republican Party that we haven't seen since Reagan.
Okay. I have to ask this question because last week the New York Times had an opinion piece that questioned the media's ability to cover Donald Trump. They said, how can you say he's unstable and turn around and cover him? Is there a media bias against this candidate?
I think a story on Donald Trump that's a negative story will last 3 days, where a negative story on Hillary Clinton will last about 20 minutes. I do think there is a little bit of a media slant towards Hillary Clinton. I think some of the examples we've seen is the coverage or the lack of coverage on the Benghazi mom who spoke at convention about not getting answers from Hillary Clinton, whose son was killed and still can't get the truth. We really haven't seen her be discussed in the news, but a similar story about Donald Trump will take 3 or 4 days of media coverage.
As you've worked around the state with various county party chairs and activists, talk about areas you think he's doing really well in, and conversely, are there areas where he maybe needs to shore up a little?
Well, certainly Macomb is an area that he's doing very well in, the Upper Peninsula areas that haven't always been solid Republican areas. He's bringing around some different voters. He has to do very well in Kent and Ottawa, where our strong Republican strongholds are. And I think Mike Pence going to those areas a couple weeks ago is going to help shore up our base there. And I think Oakland County is an area where he's going to have to make up some ground as well. And we're certainly going to be concentrating on those areas as we roll out this campaign further.
If his numbers don't turn around in the state, straight party voting is going to be in place under the judge's ruling. Talk a little bit about that issue and kind of your read on the whole straight party question.
I think, first of all, merit-based voting on a specific candidate is good policy. You know, we didn't get involved in the straight party ticket legislation, but I think it makes no sense to go in and vote for a political party. You should vote for a person. The Democrats have taken that to court to challenge it. It has currently been overturned. We'll see what happens on that front, but for me, if I were a candidate, I'd want people to vote based on me and my record, not on my political party. And that's what most states are doing in this country. We're only one of 10 states that still continued the practice of straight party ticket voting.
Okay. One of the things we've been looking at lately, Steve Mitchell, Mitchell Research and Communications, had a poll recently. They kind of showed the impact of Flint, certainly on the governor's job approval rating numbers. Is the Flint issue something you think is going to impact voters' actions? Has it tarnished the Republican Party brand at the state level here?
I think voters are recognizing that it's actually been the governor and Republican legislators who've turned our state around. We were in a terrible place not that long ago under Jennifer Granholm. Our unemployment topped out at almost 15%. We were far beyond the national average. We've added 460,000 jobs. Our incomes are rising. Businesses are coming back to this state. I think those are the types of things that voters are going to be looking at. And our governor's willingness to take responsibility for what happened in Flint, to work within the Flint community with the mayor on a bipartisan level with the legislature to bring solutions to that community that still is in need. And that's what we should expect from our politicians, that they can shed party lines in a time of crisis and work together to find solutions. And I'm proud of our state and our ability to do that for the people of Flint. Our state's given over $200 million in funding. At the federal level, we've only seen $5 million come to Flint. And certainly the EPA bears some responsibility as to what happened in that community as well.
When you're talking to Republicans that we've talked about already that are kind of wavering, they're coming around slower, what's the best argument that you make as to why they don't want a Hillary Clinton as president?
Well, there's a lot of different ways. There's many Republicans who feel like Donald Trump is the change agent we need, that Washington is stagnant, they're not solving major issues, and it's going to take a new face, a new type of person, a businessman, to make those changes. There are some Republicans who are going to vote for Donald Trump because they don't want Hillary Clinton. And there are some who are very concerned about the Supreme Court and what that will mean in terms of our constitutional frame framework with things like executive orders and regulatory overreach and religious freedom and gun rights. How's that going to play out under a Hillary Clinton judge versus a Donald Trump judge? So those are many different reasons I see Republicans coming around to Donald Trump. I don't care why you vote for him, just vote for him, because we don't want Hillary Clinton in the White House.
You've held this slot as chair since 2015. What have you found about this role that surprised you?
Well, I think I came in at a very interesting time as chair. Certainly nationally, we've never seen a presidential race like this. I love it. I love traveling the state. Our state is so unique geographically. You go to the UP, it's very different than the Thumb or Western Michigan, so I enjoy that part of it. I'm very proud of the Republican record of leadership in Michigan. I want to continue that. It's turned life around for my family, for my friends, for my neighbors. It was a tough time under Jennifer Granholm to see my friends and people I knew lose their jobs and lose their homes. So it's personal for me to be in this role and give our governor a final 2 years with a Republican House so that he can accomplish all the good things that he has done and will do to keep Michigan strong and on the comeback.
Are you enjoying the role?
Yes, I like it. There are days where, of course, I don't like it. Yesterday, we had a big news story blow up, and I was at the doctor with my kids, and it's tough to, like any working mom, to balance all those roles. But I love it. I'm passionate about Michigan. I'm passionate about what Republicans have done in this state, and it's personal to me like it is to everyone else.
Have you thought much about running for a second term?
Yeah, I would most likely run for a second term, I think. I think this is a tough position to just do for 2 years. Okay. We'll see what the cards hold after November. I probably won't be making a decision until after the elections.
Enough to think about before that,
right? Enough to think about before that.
Okay. Give me your status. What's the status of the Tea Party in Michigan, in your opinion?
Well, I think there's a lot of, I don't know what I would say, misinformation about the Tea Party. The Tea Party is not just one group. There's many different Tea Parties across the state with many different philosophies. It's not just one monolithic group. And so if you're working with the Tea Party in Grand Rapids, it's different than the Tea Party in Canton or Plymouth, near where I live. But these are people who are very concerned about things like our national debt and our deficit and our civil liberties and things of that nature. And most of them are people who really got involved in 2010 because they felt like the government just wasn't holding up their end of the bargain. And they said, we're going to get more informed on issues and we're going to take a stronger role in our communities because it's better to be engaged than to be silent. And I think that's a good thing. There's too many people that I know who don't pay attention to politics, who don't vote, who aren't getting involved at the level they should. And we want everyone involved and interested because that makes our country better.
Any key House races you're focusing in on right now that you're...
Well, there's several key House races. There's a lot of open seats that we'll be looking at. Pat Somerville's seat, for example, downriver. Holly Hughes is a seat that's a tough seat always. In a presidential year versus a gubernatorial year, it's switched hands a few times. But we're going to be focusing on all our members. We had a great candidate recruitment. We had a good primary night last Tuesday. The Democrats had some of their key recruits lose. I feel good about our prospects of keeping the House. It is tougher for us in a presidential year, so we've got to be on our game, and we're doing all the things that we need to do to maintain that majority.
First congressional district, that was kind of a surprise. What'd you take of that?
Well, I wasn't necessarily surprised because I knew you had these three candidates and geography isn't play in the first district, whether you're from the UP or you're below the bridge or a troll, as they say. And with the heated contest between Casperson and Allen, and the general went up early on TV, it really was anybody's race. I do think people didn't know the general. He was the lesser known of the candidates, but we're really excited about that race and think he's going to do a great job representing that first district.
When you look at him and you look at Mitchell in the Miller seat, they're both definitely outsiders. Is that the theme this year? I mean, is that what we've got? People just are anybody but whoever's been there?
I think it was specific to those candidates and the messages they gave that resonated. I mean, Paul Mitchell ran an excellent race. He also had a lot of resources in that 10th district. And then the general talking about his military experience and national security was something that I think absolutely resonated in the first district. But we had a lot of our incumbents win on primary night too. All the House incumbents won. So I think it's dependent to each individual area and those voters and the message of that candidate.
I think that pretty much wraps it up. Thank you for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to the crew here. And hopefully there's nothing that we have to travel to this week because half of our office does not have a vehicle right now. And I traveled to both speeches last week, and I'm tired of traveling to more speeches, so I don't want it to. Jacob, that would mean that you'd have to travel if something were to happen.
I'm up for it, as long as my car doesn't go into the MERS body shop.
I think we're going to have to open like an auto repair shop here. Between Simon and Abby,
we've got a garage, so just pop that sucker on open. But you don't, you can't listen. You guys banished me to Chicago for NCSL for an entire week, so that's what Kyle's not disclosing here.
Oh, yeah, but you didn't need a car down there. You took the train.
I volunteered to go to Chicago, if I recall.
You were fine in Chicago. It was when you got back to Lansing that the problem took place.
Well, maybe we got to send you back. There's something else going on in Chicago. How about Indianapolis? You need a car for that, though, I think. Okay, we'll visit that discussion next week. Until next week, I'm Kyle Mullane. Take care.